I just wanted to maybe focus in a little bit by telling you how I think about what the opportunity is here. And I want to start by just playing an association game to get you warmed up. And if you look at that list of four cities, Nashville, New York City, Los Angeles, and Seattle, would you just kind of shout out either individual companies that you think of related to those cities or industries that those cities kind of own?
Country music.
All right, country music. We'll do Nashville first. Anything else? Or Nashville just has that?
Insurance.
Insurance.
Vanderbilt.
What's Vanderbilt?
University.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, sorry. How about New York City?
Yeah. Bloomberg.
Media.
All right.
Fashion.
Finance.
Yeah.
Formerly the finance capital of the world.
Third on that list.
What else? Did someone say music?
Advertising.
Broadway, yeah. Broadway. All right. Advertising. All right, how about the next one?
Movies.
Movies.
Yeah. Film. TV. What else? I would actually throw in aviation. They sort of have a big aviation cluster there.
Yeah, they actually have autos, too.
Autos?
Aerospace.
Yeah, all the ones that still exist are out there.
Yeah. Aerospace.
Okay. And aerospace. Satellite industry. Misspelling that. How about Seattle?
Technology. Yeah.
Coffee.
Rain.
Boeing.
Boeing, yeah. Someone said rain.
Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon. All right. So the reason that I kind of been writing about the issue and that I wanted to bring together this very high-powered group is I just don't think if we played this game in any of these other cities and said Boston, I don't think that there would be a lot to fill the space other than, you know, Harvard, MIT, Cheers, right?
Red Sox,
Paul Revere. I think you would get a lot of stuff that people in this room would be kind of disappointed by. I'm not sure you would get Genzyme. I'm not sure you would get EMC. I'm not sure you would get clean energy.
You might get healthcare.
You would get the hospital.
You know, world-class hospitals.
Yeah.
You'd get that.
So the reason I've been writing about this is I just feel like there's an opportunity to say, all right, we need to do a better job communicating what happens here in any innovation space, you know, any industry, whether it's kind of the healthcare IT stuff that Steve was talking about, whether it's in social media, whether it's in clean tech. So I think about this as an opportunity that's any innovation space. I don't think we have to pick one thing and say, all right, we're going to do life sciences. Everyone get behind life sciences, and that's what we're going to send out. I actually think you could have a broader sort of messaging, broader communications, and say any innovation space. I don't exactly know how we say it, but my belief is you could throw your arms over everything that happens in New England and even say, you know, geez, I was writing about golf-related entrepreneurs this past week. You know, I even think innovation in the golf industry, you know, you could potentially do something that includes those guys too. Right. And then also I just feel like there's so much great stuff that happens here, whether it's, you know, Mass TLC doing their great conferences and events, or the new Boston World Partnerships. There's so much stuff that happens that's kind of tied to a little piece of the New England geography, like Boston, like New Hampshire, like Rhode Island, like Connecticut, and nothing that's happening that's really pan-regional, you know, that throws its arms around, you know, gee, Burlington, Vermont, you know, has a great school up there. They've done some interesting companies around sort of medical info and, like, prescription. I forget that company that's up there.
Ice cream.
That you may know. They do some great stuff on ice cream and skiing. Yeah, IDX is what I was trying to think of, and, you know, Burton Snowboards. And so I want to think about kind of any innovation space and all around New England, because my belief is that, you know, while it might be great to pick Rhode Island or Connecticut or Boston and try to brand that and communicate that, that in the global economy that's just too small. And particularly if you're competing against, you know, an entire country and their communication strategy, or a big state like California that already has so much wind in its sails, it's just hard to say, all right, we're going to brand Portsmouth and explain, like, why Portsmouth is the center of everything. So this is just kind of me trying to set the table a little bit in how I think, and you can totally ignore it in what you contribute to this discussion. And then when I think about who are we trying to communicate to, these are the three groups that I think about. You know, I think about the students who come here already. You know, we get them smart and then kind of release them back into the wild. So I think about sort of how do we retain more students from Brown or from UNH or from any of these great schools. So I think about communicating to them. I think about communicating to entrepreneurs who exist everywhere else in the world and may think about coming here to get funding and start a company or having some connection with Boston, you know, some office or some, you know, maybe they move their whole company here. And then I think about the big companies like the Novartises over in Central Square, like Google, and how do we communicate to them that they feel like they need to have some foothold, you know, Amgen in Rhode Island, so that they feel like this is a place, even if they're headquartered in Germany or headquartered in California, that they feel like they need to have a presence there. Are there any other groups that people in this room think about? And I want to kind of focus on not communicating to people who already live here about how great we are, because I just think you already know if you live in Cambridge, if you live in Providence, you already know that those are great communities. So I want to think about outside of our borders, communicating constituencies there.
So we think a lot about alumni. We think a lot about people who came here to either work for a while or to go to school and have moved on, and their perceptions of Boston are locked in time with whenever they were last here.
Yeah.
Their perceptions of New England.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, like when I lived in San Francisco, all the Boston alumni who went to the Red Sox games in Oakland and kind of felt like that was their expat community.
Right, right.
Well, Scott, actually, I disagree with you. I think you need to think about the people that actually do live here, because I think they know very little about what happens here. And they don't know how to tell the story.
Yeah.
So, you know, you think you're surrounded by it, therefore you should know it, and I don't think they know it.
Yeah. So, like, maybe the indigenous peoples here who aren't necessarily involved in innovation industry, but they have some vague sense that, you know.
Or we're, I mean, like with any place, you know your own silo.
Yeah, yeah.
So at Longwood area, you know, Jocelyn, they know the diabetes stuff.
Yeah.
They don't know about the organ transplants that are the Brigham.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's that narrow, and people really, there's no general education.
Okay, so I would call that like cross-training, you know, like
yeah,
you may work
exactly.
in biotech, but you know nothing about tech or vice versa.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point.
Scott, I'd also say maybe an overlay to all of those groups is families, because what is it about these areas that either people want to come to for quality of life, the other part of the you know, sort of the professional equation,
yeah,
is that and so it's a great innovative space,
yeah,
but why should I do more than just work here?
Yeah.
And or think about business here, because everybody's got another part of their life.
Okay, that's cool. So pitching to families, kind of the family aspects of living here. We don't need to keep going. I don't really have a set amount of time that I want to spend. And so,
I thought you were spelling something out there.
Yeah, right. It's their acronym. It's evasive. And then just the three last things I want to touch on kind of in setting the table is I want to brainstorm about stuff that kind of could run the whole spectrum from free to very expensive, but my bias tends to be towards the free, because I just think if you think about, all right, so we want to buy every billboard on 101 in California and tell them how great New England is, you know, feel free to pitch an idea like that if you have some thoughts about how you get the funding for it. You know, you go to Joseph and say, like, all right, can you give us, you know, $15 million to buy all the billboards for a year in California? So my bias tends to be towards this end of the spectrum. It's like, what could we think about that would be free or very cheap to do? I also tend to think on time frames. I'm very biased against, I was telling Don, like these long projects that, you know, would start with this meeting and still be going on in 5 years, and we'd have to meet every quarter and blah, blah, blah. I think about what are the things we could do within 6 months to a year to really move the needle. And, you know, a thought that I had just kind of walking over here was, I don't want to propose any kind of committee infrastructure, regular meetings, but what if we came back in a year, you know, in May or June of next year and said, like, all right, here's what's happened, you know, and maybe there are some new things we want to talk about or challenges. So I think of a very tight time frame, and I don't want to task you with, let's have working groups and, you know, continue to talk about this. And the last thing is just how my bias, like I said, tends to be not towards structured, you know, creating a lot of extra work for the very busy people in this room, and much more towards, you know, what can we do that's like over a weekend setting up a wiki, you know, or a distributed group of people who care about healthcare and IT and taking on that chunk of it. So hopefully that will make you feel not intimidated about having come here, because I don't want to create extra work. Yeah.
Just a quick, I mean, as you frame the challenge, just a very quick story. When I first went into the public sector under duress, I must tell you, we did an exercise where we took every state and we got their positioning strategies and their advertising, and we went into a conference room exactly like this, and we put them up on the board. And I took masking tape, and I put it over the name of the state. And then I brought people into the room, because I wanted to see whether any of these positioning strategies and advertising campaigns, you know, were connected to the place at all. And I don't think I would shock you, you know, when I share with you, nobody could do, maybe nobody could even come close to matching what people were saying, what the states were saying about themselves with the actual place itself. There was absolutely no correlation to that, and I think that's still true. And maybe it's in large part because we don't know what the positioning is, because we don't have an agreement on that. But there's a huge, huge disconnect. If you look at this advertising, they all say exactly the same thing. There is nothing differentiable, you know, about what we're saying. But we're all saying it's a great place to live, you know, it's a great place to work. You know, we're all trying to get the, you know, the high technology innovation, you know, oriented positioning. We really have to think through that. So yeah, it's good to have this conversation.
Yeah, and I would just respond to that by saying, I think whenever you use the word branding and you say, all right, we're going to brainstorm about branding or messaging or communication, people think, okay, our goal is let's come up with a slogan to say New England is, you know, it's the new New England, you know, New England 2.0. And we can talk about some of that in the brainstorming, but my bias also tends to be against let's come up with a slogan that everyone will remember and repeat, and much more towards concrete things. Which I'll talk about a little bit later, but I wanted to get Don to talk a little bit about, and other people to talk about, sort of what exists now that fits into this paradigm. I guess Don and Dave to start, that sort of is us trying to communicate to other people, you know, to any of these constituencies, what's happening here. And would you just talk about kind of, you guys are very specifically focused on how do we communicate to the students that have already come here for 4 years, six years, 8 years?
We are. And what has been the case is that Goldman Sachs comes on campus, 200 students sign up for interviews, they buy a suit, and they line up to get the Goldman Sachs jobs. You get, MyTech's companies are typically 50 employees doing internet development activity. I expect the same thing goes on in the life sciences and in clean energy. And none of those companies has got a presence, and none of them gets 200 people lined up. What we've been trying to do is to say, look, there is an internet business that's vital here in Boston and in New England, and collectively we're providing access to about 1,000 jobs this year. And that gets people's attention. Well, any jobs this year will get people's attention. But that's the point. So how do you get all these pebbles to be a whole beach of opportunity for these people? That's really what we've been working on doing. Kiki, what do you think?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the biggest roadblock we have is with the schools and the career service officers, and they don't understand what the internet industry is and that there's a lot of opportunities. So to your point of educating kind of the residents within, we've got some big steps to overcome just to make them understand that there are jobs behind a screen and they employ a lot of people.
So. So Dave, do you want to talk a little bit about Boston World Partnerships? Because that's still only launched 2-3 months ago.
Sure, yeah. I'll try to give you the kind of real, you know, kernel of it. Basically, you know, I'm really relieved to hear that we're not trying to come up with a slogan, because in thinking about what Boston World Partnership should be, why the world needs us, what we would do that isn't redundant, that was kind of one of my big things. The other thing, Saul, all that collateral that you're referring to, every city is a gateway to something. Everybody's a gateway, right? We're the gateway to the Tennessee Valley. We're the gateway to whatever. So yeah, I'm, you know, bored to death with all that stuff and just think it has no value. And so the idea of, you know, Dave McLaughlin in a room writing brochures, the world doesn't need that. But, you know, me and sort of the resources of the organization, we have a pretty great board and this group of connectors I was saying is really compelling. Us instead thinking about and investing in and shaping a framework through which actual Boston business people, and we say Boston, we're not talking about the political boundaries of the city, we're talking about, you know, people who are tied to the city, whether they live in Munich or, you know, Berlin, New Hampshire or whatever. So you know, the notion of creating a framework through which actual kind of rank and file folks can express their unique knowledge and perspective and enthusiasm for this city, this part of the world, and what it offers them, that suddenly feels very compelling to us. Of course, like, nobody's quite figured out, you know, exactly how to do that. So that's an equation that's very fluid for us. The core idea, like I said, is this group of connectors that are our attempt to seed the network that really sort of comprise the vanguard. We think of our mantra very simply as inform and connect. So kind of our goal is to, you know, use this emergent people network to share information, to inform the world about what Greater Boston offers. And then also, you know, we think if we're going to inform effectively, then we should expect to be driving demand. And if we're going to drive demand, we had better be prepared to respond to that demand. So if we say, hey, X is here in Boston, and somebody comes and says, great, I want to access X, we think we'd better be able to help them access X. And so that's kind of the connect side for us.
And you guys think about the whole panoply of things here, like the Boston Symphony. We want to tell people about that, and we also want to tell people about, you know, biotech and internet companies and, you know,
so we do have a content, you know, portion of what we're doing, but frankly, we think of sort of three phases to this. If a network is going to be your medium, then first you got to build the network, and then you can think about activating the network, which is I think a little more what you're talking about. What information do you push through it, and what information do the members push through it, and then kind of what does the network yield? So kind of mining the network. Mm-hmm. So build, activate, mine, or harvest. And so the whether we're talking about marketing to tourists or marketing to businesses, whether we're pushing the symphony or the ICA, that's a little bit less of our focus right now because we're so early on. Our real focus right now, what I spend, you know, what I kind of am thinking about all the time is connector behavior. How do I stimulate this group of connectors to use this tool and to help us define and populate this tool in ways that have greater impact on our mission and our goals.
Right.
So it's all methodology for us right now, which is why a content conversation is so valuable, because I always joke, like, we're not really a substantive organization. You know, we're counting on the substance from a lot of other
and
people.
And you guys have a Facebook group, right? That's one of the ways you're building the network?
We do.
And how many people, roughly, on the Facebook group?
I don't know, 600 or something like that. Uh-huh. You know, we're not using it so well yet.
Yeah. And I guess I wondered if Janice or John would talk a little bit about kind of life sciences, and is there something that Mass Biotech is doing? Because I feel like life science is the one industry that's maybe furthest ahead or has the best case to say, you know, we're kind of a world leader here in Boston and Cambridge and, you know, could actually have the data to stand behind, you know, to stand behind that.
Well, I don't know what the Mass Biotech Council is doing about that, but I know life sciences has grown from a very small industry to now often people feel it sometimes gets an unequal share of attention. And but it's still quite small relative to many other industries that are here. So I think the academic community has played a large role in bringing people here, and the corporations that have grown up have. But I think it's getting the story out about opportunities, and for a long time in the early days, if you didn't have a PhD, it was very hard to get a job, or there was no connection other than if you went out of a senior role in academia. Now there's opportunities all along the way, and finding ways to communicate that out has been important. And now, obviously, the administration understands that and hears that and promotes that. So a lot has come from a political side as well, getting the story out and thinking about it and talking about it. But a lot has to do, I think, with how everyone just talks about it. And it's like we all came up with the word hospitals, right? We were thinking about that when we talked about our community. There's got to be a way for people to be able to talk about the different industries that are here. And in terms of making connections, I think you know, other than the council playing a role historically in that aspect, you know, it's for days you were talking about companies showing up and not having one stand in line. Mm-hmm. Well, it was the old days, and now actually you get larger organizations that have visible roles, like the Genzymes and the Biogens, and they're more visible and therefore have a bigger footprint, and I think that helps. But making the connection is still challenging in some regard, because a lot of people feel they're on the outside and they don't know how to get in.
Yeah, it's funny because when we talked about the group of, what do you call them, like indigenous people who may not be in the industry, whenever I write about biotech, mm-hmm. I often get emails from people saying, you know, who believe that biotech, like, are these just kind of money-gobbling companies that never produce anything, and like don't understand that there's often a drug on the other end that, you know, is going to save someone's life or prolong someone's life. So there's interesting perceptions, I think, locally around what biotech companies do. So, Kel? Yeah.
I was going to see if we would take the plane up 50,000 feet. So I think we have to talk about you know, how we label the region. Because I think our biggest challenge is when we say, we just played word association and mindshare association with those other cities,
right,
and all those wonderful things came up. I think, like, Silicon Valley had a label that went on it, and I'm not talking about a tagline, by the way. Like, this is to brand it without calling it New England. It opens a huge door of opportunity for us to take the minds of everybody, that all of those bubbles there, and imprint basically what we want that association to be. Because now what we're trying to do is displace, you know, well, we're not Yankees, and we're not this, and we're not those things. But if you came up, this is a bad example, because naming takes a while, but, you know, even if it was like Tech East, and you in the Globe refer to it Tech East, and I in my blog refer to it as Tech East, and you did that. I actually think we should also suck in New York, because I think people like Fred Wilson are doing some really amazing things, and he's battling the West Coast.
So, but before, I kind of want to make that the next step about what should we be doing, what should we be talking about, what should we be thinking, but I want to spend just two more minutes about, like, on the kind of what exists now and what's happening now. And I guess, Nick, I wanted to ask you the question of, so we now have New England Clean Energy Council. Is there something like that anywhere else in the world? Like, do other regions, does California have a clean energy trade association yet, or has no one yet put their flag in the ground and said?
Not, I guess the short answer is no. There's a couple shades of gray, but, and I think that's one interesting aspect of clean energy in this region, is that in part it's the council, which I guess deserves some credit, but two other catalysts, MIT, which just went all in on energy. Of course, the Patrick administration, this was part of the campaign trail, and they came out swinging, and Secretary Bowles has done a good job. In New England, you've got a very interesting dynamic around clean energy. It is almost like a family. It is, you know, in California, I'm sure there are young clean tech gatherings where lots of young folks get together and talk about, you know, the industry and so forth. In New England, that happens as well, but it also happens at the very most senior levels of venture capital partners and very senior attorneys and CEOs and so forth. And there was some coalescing force as this sector came together, which made it much less dog-eat-dog than your average sector. I'm not sure whether that was true of biotech in the early days. Perhaps it was. But there's really this amazing family feel to it, which I know California is even jealous of. I've heard West Coastites say it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And that's always a good thing. And I guess I was going to ask a question of you, John, just in terms of, like, being from the world of the bigger biotech companies. Is there something from your perspective that you see that's happening now that's doing a good job of communicating, you know, here's what we do in New England? I know we had the giant biotech industry conference here a year or two ago, which did some of that, but anything since then?
Yeah, I wouldn't say anything since then. I would say bio, was it last summer?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
07? Yeah. I think that was a major event for the location. It's in Atlanta this year, and hardly anyone is going to that event. But having it here in Boston, and so easily accessible to people all over the world, really made that event. But, you know, I guess I've seen this. Different organizations try to do this individually. So, believe it or not, Harvard Medical School tried to figure out how to brand itself in the wider world. I've seen biotechnology, the industry do it, and Mass Biotech. And they're actually doing an okay job, but still finding their footing. They do, to your question earlier, do they have numbers? Yes, they do have numbers. Second. Set us apart from other locations. And I've also seen NEHI and the Mass Tech Collaborative. They also have resources to do that.
But NEHI is the New England Healthcare Institute,
New
right?
England Healthcare Institute and the Mass Biotech Collaborative, which is a quasi-governmental organization. They also have numbers. But, you know, one thing that I have seen largely is in biotech is complacency. That it's an industry that almost is taken for granted, that the success of it will occur, and they didn't need the $1 billion amount of money that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But regardless of however you think that money is best used, because I have my own opinions on whether or not it was well-spent money or is being well-spent money, the industry itself is on shaky ground, and most companies don't have enough money to survive and will not survive. And I think the message enzymes and Biogens and a few others, Amgens. Hopefully, we will continue to survive. But you know, I would say everybody's on shaky ground. Mm-hmm.
Does anyone else want to chime in just with kind of in this segment of kind of what exists now that everyone in the room should know about? Yeah.
Yeah. We've been working for about 10 years on this, talking about what the story is and trying to have people connect with particular stories. And we've used drama or otherwise. We do these History and Innovation Awards each year, which have gained some prominence over the last, this is the 10th year of doing it, and it's still going. Strong, and trying to purposely bring together people from different industries, and then the sort of the cross fertilization of knowing about stories in other industries. And again, it's with drama. We did a Innovation Odyssey tour of Greater Boston, various other things. And we've experimented with some of this, and some of it has caught on, and there's been some energy around it. But there's a lot to say for sort of drama and tourism and otherwise in terms of creating a story that's compelling to people and interesting to people. We're working with this new Boston Museum on an innovation gallery for that that would be on the Greenway and that sort of thing.
Yeah, Steve.
Steve Wardell. I just asked that the health IT sector or the e-health sector, there's about 70 companies in New England in that sector. It's going through its third historical boom, and Boston's cluster, or New England's cluster, is the second biggest in the U.S. after the West Coast, which has about 200 companies as part of its boom. And there's zero knowledge of this outside of the health IT sector itself. There's zero branding, zero communication. So that's an area potentially very exciting. Obama just steered $19 billion into the health IT sector. Some of the companies you may have heard of, Meditech's the biggest and the oldest. Athena Health went public last year. E-Clinical Works, of the 70, only about 7 to 10 are financially viable or successful right now, so it's very much a nascent, emergent sector, but that has a lot of potential as well.
Cool. So, what Carol, and then we'll move on.
Okay,
again.
Well, you're under the what exists now.
Yeah, go ahead.
So just, maybe...
And Carol, and then Jeff.
Thank you.
You know, again, maybe just raising it up for maybe future discussion, virtually, is... What exists now in the area? What exists in all the different regions that are represented here? What exists in all of the different industries that are represented here? What exists elsewhere in Silicon Valley and Hollywood that's working, mm-hmm. that are potential best practices that we don't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel
yeah.
for?
Great.
So maybe creating a list of that and mm-hmm. having some future discussion and contributing to that may be something down the road.
Okay. Yeah, Jeff. Yeah.
On the topic of what exists now, Scott, I was going to ask you on behalf of the only media company in the room, because so much of success in these profiles and positionings is with the successful media company behind it. You know, what would New York City be without the Wall Street Journal? What would Silicon Valley be without the San Jose Mercury News? You know, it's been depressing to me to see the business section of the Globe disappear behind, you know, 10 pages of neighborhood shootings, and the website, you know, have a pretty thin veneer of profiles of some of the great companies and innovations and whatnot going on. And I guess I wonder if you could tell us what do you feel like exists today in the media world in Boston? You know, where are there some jewels? Can we do something to help the Globe be stronger as a business advocate for the community? What, you know, is there something there? Is there a there?
So that's why you didn't want to come to the meeting tonight.
No, I figure if I can feed you, I can take a swing at you.
Right.
No, you're not management. No, I appreciate it. You're actually one of the few that...
I'm not management or union, so...
You're putting the spotlight on the good companies. How do we get 10x Scott Kirzner's running around Boston?
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't know how to answer the questions about the Globe, other than the thing that's been encouraging to me is to see little micro media companies springing up, and also to see. I mean, before I moved to California in 2005, there weren't any. Jeff was the only VC blogger in Boston. You know, there weren't really any tech entrepreneur or biotech entrepreneur bloggers, and so the thing that's most encouraging to me is just that I have a list on my blog, Innovation Economy, of probably 30 people. You know, Steve Wardell and, you know, Jeff Bennett and Kel and others in the room who have blogs now and who are sort of reporting about their little portion of the world. But Jeff, I give you that, you know, aside from Xconomy, which mm-hmm. is kind of the one new startup mm-hmm. that's really been assiduously covering tech and biotech and clean tech in town, that we could use other stuff, you know, and could use, you know, this is just my opinion, not speaking for the Globe as an institution, you know, the Globe could use some refocusing in terms of the priorities of, you know, of what they're covering, whether it's in print or online. So there. Can we move on, Jeff, or do you want to? We're gonna move on because we can always just disconnect.
That's good. I appreciate the candid answer.
But I think it's an important point that, you know, someone, whether it's the Globe or someone else, does need to, hopefully the Globe and many other places, do need to kind of be the champions of kind of covering this pretty comprehensively. So,
well, I just want to say, though, you make a really good point. None of us are going to, the Globe is going to be what the Globe is going to be. It's not going to get saved, meaning it might not go out of print. I don't want to assume that. But this business section, this has been this way for 15 years, right? Back in the day, they only covered Lotus, and maybe there was a pop. You have been a pop. And so I think to think of the Globe as the media focus or the voice, the place of where the voice of Boston might get to the outside world is a time sink. Mm-hmm. And the better thing to think about, and where I'm sure we're going with this conversation, is how to turn the individuals in this room and our 25 degrees of people from us, all of the people that you wrote in the email you sent me last night, that have a vested interest in innovation in New England across the 10 categories that we could list here. Mm-hmm. How do we start to stitch it together, and how do we create our own voice? And to some extent, a piece of that voice might become a form of media that is populated by this
right.
blogging,
and I would argue,
citizen journalism.
You know, I don't want to do too much comparison to Silicon Valley, but I'd argue that the San Jose Mercury News is not the sort of news source of Silicon Valley anymore. It's probably TechCrunch and VentureBeat and a bunch of other blogs that didn't exist 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, and we have that potential to create that here. And it might not be a business at the beginning, right? It can be the groundswell effect of like what a TechCrunch was before they tried to capitalize on it.
Right.
But I think that's a really important point, because we live in a Web 2.0 world. The power is with the people and the individual voices. That's how you get this message and you change people's opinions.
Yeah.
You are an anomaly at the Boston Globe. And I've been pitching, you know, I've watched that for 15 years, so I know. But it's not going to be saving the Globe. It's how do we get this message out through blogs, through Twittering, through, you know,
I mean,
all
I would
the social
actually
media
cite,
outlets.
You know, Steve did this event in March, April,
February,
where, you know, he just said, all right, let's get together everyone who cares about e-healthcare and electronic medical records in one place. And used social media and used all the bloggers who write about this stuff, and like suddenly 700 people showed up at the Seaport Hotel, you know, on a night in February. So, and that was not because the Globe wrote about it, I don't think. It was just sort of you using the community to
wrote about it, but the Globe didn't write it.
Not in the Globe, but I think on my blog. So what I wanted to do is like spend the main chunk of our time together talking about what Kel started talking about, which is like, what should we do, what could we do, what should exist. What are some maybe tactical things we could do to communicate? You know, not necessarily talk about is there nomenclature? Are there logos that we should have? But also, you know, I think about tactical stuff. Like someone mentioned, you know, maybe there could be a wiki that lists every association in New England or every venture capital firm in New England and what they focus on. Or I'm trying to think of other things. You know, someone might say we need a podcast series of like the great entrepreneurs of New England, you know, where we go around, someone goes around and interviews them. Anything that you could sort of get your hands around. I don't want to get too big and too grandiose. And what I want to do is let's talk about this until we start to feel low energy, and then we'll take a break and remind you there are soft drinks over there and there's still more pizza, so hop up and get more food if you want to. But so we'll do this until we kind of seem to slow down. Then we'll take a quick break and then just wrap up by talking about like what next. So. Yeah, Kristen, why don't you, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, well, so I just want to say two other strange things that are kind of out of nowhere. The first is that I think it makes sense to at least do the same jot down, maybe over here or something, mm-hmm. of the industries that we consider innovation. Because mm-hmm. I think that's where I actually genuinely think that's where the struggle might happen. And mm-hmm. I know no one wants to hear this from a PR person that puts the word innovation in 90% of the pitches. But the reality is, innovation is the word is the problem, in my opinion. It's because no one knows what the hell that means, right? What does it mean anymore? And if you don't know what it means, and I don't, it's like, it's vague. It's too vague, or it's...
I agree. It's what Saul said. Yeah, you can't be best service, best people, best, you know, campus, best teachers, best...
Okay, so, if Kristen's suggesting, you know, maybe we need to...
So I'm saying two things. Let's list the industries.
Bust that.
Yeah, well, yeah, like, let's list what we mean. Like, so we know we mean clean tech. We know we mean e-healthcare. We know we're including social media, web 2.0, internet. Let's just make sure we get our list down. Life sciences. Biotech. Let's get our list down so we know the categories of industries we're talking about. But such was one of the two things I wanted to say. And the second thing was, I just wanted to put it out there that, to some extent, I have always worried that the phrase innovation was vague and overused.
Okay.
The word is.
So can we spend a minute doing other just industries that are included here?
Software.
Can I just take a... I want to answer that question, but I want to take a little different spin because I frankly think the way we define industries is wrong. What if we actually put the problem we're trying to solve or the value we're trying to deliver to someone? So take the healthcare piece that you're talking about. You know, what if we as a region marshaled all of these nodes that we've got around the region to actually deliver better care for less money to our population and then align industries and technology to add to that? Why don't we do it in the energy space? But instead of talking about the industry silos, which basically results in silos that don't connect to one another, if we actually organize the networks, and I love the connector idea, if we actually started connecting people, institutions, technologies around solving the actual problem, we could get out of this trap of it's just biotech research and we're not really solving the healthcare problem. Well, we have all the assets here to solve the healthcare problem, but yet we don't deliver any better healthcare, you know, for less money than anywhere else in the country. Why don't we actually solve it?
Right. Okay, so, I mean, at the risk of being a bad facilitator, can we spend just a minute talking about the old school industry focus and then a minute talking about, you know, what are some of the problems we solve here? So on the industry side first?
The arts.
Okay.
Actually, no one ever thinks of that. Education.
Yeah.
Sports.
Social innovation.
So the social innovation, I mean, you look at marriage equality, you look at City Year, you look at New Profit Inc. and all the not-for-profits that it's worked on. Political change.
Uh-huh. Can I make a comment on social innovation?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason the bill is called the Kennedy Bill. There's a reason the chairman of that organization is a local entrepreneur. Turned political activist named Alan Solomon. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that the Clinton head of the National Service Program was a Boston guy, Eli, help me with the last name, someone.
Siegel,
thank you. So I think we've got a great claim on social innovation.
So any other on the listing industries?
Defense,
telecommunications.
Finance?
Software in general.
Telecom.
Material science?
Gaming.
Yeah, that seems
like digital games.
Digital would be
robotics. Casinos. We got that Connecticut.
We think it's integrated in casinos.
Robotics.
Yeah.
Robotics.
Flying cars.
Well, I would actually say transportation. I mean, there is like a flying car company. You know, there's Zipcar. There's probably a few other.
A123.
There's Segway up in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Transportation. Any others, and then we'll move on to salt.
Does medical innovation fall into any of those?
When I say life sciences, Janice might argue, I include like biotech, pharma, medical devices.
No.
But
finance, I mean, VC is a part of finance. And
okay, we'll put them at the top since they're hosting us.
Yes, Jeff.
Med devices, sorry, did I miss another one?
Well, I mean, you have the arts, but film specifically is, you know, growing.
Yeah. And then, so let's switching over to Saul's kind of solutions-oriented. What are maybe three or four problems that we're trying to?
I just think this list therein lies the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the anchor to all of these things? And coming back into Boston, you know, I always used to love Boston because it was a real city. and, you know, Atlanta, all these other cities weren't real cities. And I feel like now, when I came back in, it was like, whoa, where do I start? There's too much innovation. There's too much going on, and there's no core. I have nowhere to go to figure out how to tap into all of these different spaces and markets. And I think one of the things that sort of has left Boston is that core focus. And going to your point, is the Silicon Alley, the Silicon Valley, the location, getting, you know, private and public sectors to come together to create a space where we can figure this out and people can visit to tap into innovation. And I love the ideas of having, you know, an exhibition at a museum about innovation, but, you know, getting people to have a location to go to that they can tap into these prongs or spokes. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
it's funny because I remember I was at Apollo Computer in the early 80s. Tons of people, as the expression went, rolled west to Sun.
Yeah.
And obviously, many of us spent lots of time on the West Coast and over the decades. It always struck me, this list has things like film and arts and so forth on it, which I think is part of what makes Boston special. I remember time and time again being in San Francisco or Palo Alto or Mountain View or wherever in a coffee shop, and as your ears scanned around you, you heard nothing but tech.
Right.
Nothing but tech.
Yeah.
It was a one. I can't say that's one sector, but figuratively speaking, sort of one-track town. You come back to Boston, you do the same thing with your ears, and everything on that list, from film to arts to this to that. I mean, there's a real life aspect to Boston, which I'm not sure how you surf it to a brand, but it always struck me that
something
about
it
was too intense. They were too caught up in it, whereas we at least were a little more.
But there's no real core. The core has sort of now started to go out into different directions to the point where, you know, do we need to reel it in so that you can understand the value of what is happening in innovation? I'm not saying to say this is Silicon Alley or this is not as a branding thing, but just as a place where these spokes can connect.
Right.
And are we doing too much as individual segments that the segments aren't connecting or helping each other? And I think that there's definitely, in these segments, you know, there's blinders on, and and those segments aren't helping each other out.
Just to reverse for one second, can we do two or three other things on the solutions list? It doesn't have to be that long, but Saul was suggesting, like, let's think about what are the global giant problems we're trying to solve here?
Healthcare, energy, and education.
Does anyone else want to add to that?
Well, I mean, the level of abstraction is wrong, isn't it? I mean, it's not healthcare, it's disease.
Right.
It's not energy, it's climate change and diminishing fossil fuel supply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Education is not enough smart people in the world, right?
I'd like to add entrepreneurship to that, because I think that it's a solution to a lot of things, and it's probably the one theme that runs through every single one of those industries.
Okay.
I think on education, Scott, I think one of our problems is we educate the world.
Yeah.
We don't retain it.
Well, that's the common denominator to all these other things that are up there. It's the source of the fountain.
Right, the reason
where,
it's here.
Where we lose people to.
But, I mean, that's somewhat where the Boston World Partnerships is, I think, a nice turn.
We're sort of looking at somebody who comes here and studies and leaves. Traditionally, that person would be looked at as a check in the loss column. We're saying, well, they're not a full check in the gain column, but we don't have to look at them as a loss. Instead, we can think of them. I like to think about like your spy movie vernacular of, like, you know, we have an asset in London. These people are assets around.
They're double agents.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're looking to sort of revise a notion of what a metropolitan area's human capital asset consists of. And we think that it consists of something greater than the people who live and work within that geographical boundary.
John?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, you know, we have this fascinating ecosystem, and it's producing a great knowledge economy. But to your point, it is a great tangible and intangible place, but to your point, we also do eat our young. So we are all fighting for precious resources, And that competition also separates us. So on one hand, we are one,
right,
as a knowledge economy, maybe the preeminent knowledge economy, maybe not. But
and Jen, when you say eat our young, you mean like there's a competition between the industries,
yeah,
for, you know, the brightest people coming out of Harvard, and so, or for venture dollars, or
venture dollars, yeah, and resources. Yeah, it's more about the money.
And you know, a city is the sum of its people, but also in Boston, or in New England, the city is the sum of its innovation. And I'm wondering what the sum is. And I feel like, you know, when we see this list, what does the sum of that equal?
Maybe we don't need to worry about the hub. You know, it's so easy to go, all right, what's the common denominator? But maybe we're just supposed to make stronger spokes. You know, because I think that's what people want to organize. I'm in the social media industry, and frankly, my interest is in making that the best it can be. Yeah. If all those other things come together, great, and I'm here to support it. But what I want to spread the word about is that hub of innovation.
Right.
And frankly, that's the extent of my reach anyway. So and my influence. So maybe we're focused on the wrong area.
Well, I think the challenge too is like you could scratch that, and someone could argue one or two words. But you could write San Francisco, or you could write New
right.
York, and
yeah.
It gets back to Saul's point, and this is where people trip all the time in branding, is you've got two things people are going to remember about your brand, a category and an attribute. And that attribute cannot be best innovation, you know, best healthcare, best whatever. It has to be a vernacular that nobody's using. I do think there's something to be said about the multidimensional. That I think falls as you get closer to San Francisco and as you're in New York, because I do think they have the arts and they have
sure.
those things. But I think before we can figure out how we go out and do it cheaply, we've got to articulate the brand. Like,
yeah.
What's the region? What's it called? And if you can answer the question, it's so simple. Why is it different? Without saying best innovation, best, you know, schools, best whatever, because we can't own that. We own that in the brand experience. We own that when the students come here. We own that when the entrepreneurs, when the venture capitalists fund those startups.
But
we've got to articulate it differently.
I guess I would ask, I mean, not that we couldn't be successful at doing this, but are there other regions of the United States? I mean, the examples I can think of where someone said, we want to brand this area X. The success has been like Hollywood and Silicon Valley, and it's hard to think of a third success where you would say...
Vegas.
Yeah, but what is the, I guess, is there a term that someone has said we're going to apply to this place that also can, you know, that connects like what happens there with the geography?
I was going to say, I think there's so many parallels to the tourism industry in New England, because the thing about it is that the richness and all the nooks and crannies and all the things that people love about New England is what makes it impossible to function and impossible to communicate.
Right.
You know, the beauty of Vegas is it was a desert, and,
right.
and things organically, you know, what happens there stays there. And so they kind of now own this dirty, aspirational brand, and it works.
It works.
Dirty, aspirational
brand. You know, we have so much history in the New England brand, it's hard to move it to the future.
Yeah.
You've
got to
change, I'm telling you, you've got to change New England. That you need something else, because you can't get the world to not think of pilgrims and turkeys and Indians and all of that stuff.
Awful.
Unless you've got like a gajillion dollars, you just need to relabel it. It's not too hard to do.
I know, why don't we do it differently?
So, yeah, go ahead, Steve. And
you asked, what's the third or fourth example of rebranding? I'd say probably the one of the best examples of rebranding that take an incredibly multifaceted regional product and turn it into a single brand was around year 2000, the Labour government of Britain said, our old name is United Kingdom, our new name is Cool Britannia.
Did that last, though?
I haven't heard of it.
Well, the other example I'm thinking of is maybe Research Triangle is an example of someone
in
the last 15 years or so getting
good.
You know, some wind in the sails of a place that we used to just think of as.
But again,
you know,
less nooks and crannies and easier to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you have so many of these specific areas that already have their well entrenched kind of sub brand and subculture. I think what you said about the spokes is that
You've got to find better connecting points. You can't really put it all under one umbrella, I don't think.
Janice?
Well, I was just trying to think about your question. Is there anything that we've done differently that's...
What makes us different?
Yeah. One of the things that makes us different, historically and even today, is our ability to reinvent ourselves. And that sounds kind of broad, but it's the fact that we have been able to recover from economic downturns and recessions and loss of industries and loss of leadership positions over 400 years. And we know that for a fact. And every time we lose leadership position in one segment, another one comes forward. And that we do better than anybody else.
We bounce. There's our tagline.
Bounce, we connect, we reinvent. And our ability to reinvent ourselves then speaks to all the underlying reasons why are we able to reinvent ourselves continually. So no one space is always in the forefront. At some point, it submerges, it loses traction, it becomes less, but others... We just don't stay stagnant.
I think that's a really huge point, and it's brilliant.
So it's the only one thing that I can think of that when you look around all the other places in the world, our ability to reinvent ourselves has been the thing that has brought us back time and time again.
But, you know, James, I would also say that when I've been thinking about, you know, what do all the industries or all these solution areas have in common is that we kind of tend to add, you know, two or three things together, like the smart people coming out of universities and the work that they're doing, and, you know, the money and sort of entrepreneurial expertise of company building. And as a result is you get, you know, Genzyme, you get Wang, you get, you know, Monster.com or pick, you know, pick any big, you know, Great Point Energy.
E-Ink and Kindle.
Yeah.
Well, you have that those drivers. See, under reinvention, the ability to do that, there are key drivers that historically have been in place in our community that have allowed that reinvention.
And but the problem is that New York and Paris claim the same stakes. Or this,
they really reinvent themselves?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Both of them.
How?
I mean,
but being a world capital gives you something. Boston doesn't have that. And it's like Edinburgh and a few other places that really have an ability to come back and not be, I mean, New York certainly has in terms of the finance from the 1800 on, but...
Sorry, Dave, you had your hand up for a while.
In the interest of, you know, maybe this is helpful, I share a little bit of our thinking about brand at Boston World Partnerships from the content side of our venture. So on our site, you know, we have... We deliberately sort of eschewed the standard sort of economic development approach to this, which is to think about sectors. So usually people go, we have this bucket of resources and this to say about biotech and this bucket and this to say about finance and so on. And we did that for a couple of reasons. One, you create exclusive lists. You pick three or four sectors, and then but you don't see what's coming and you don't, you know, it's just exclusive. But also, philosophically, we found that we were just reinforcing silos that we didn't want to reinforce. So the way we did it instead is we sort of said, what do we think this Boston brand is? And we had conversations like this, which are great but not scientific, right? So our result was we sort of distilled the components of that and made those into content channels on our site. And those content channels are ideas and innovation, healthy and green, creative capital, finance and investment, and global reach. So sort of what we've sort of put a stake in the ground and is saying, these are the components. It's not an exact answer to your point, Kel. I definitely appreciate the difference, but I'm saying, you know, healthcare, green, innovation, that we're global, that we're really punching above our weight, you know, in terms of how global the city is, that there's a strong creative community and creative capital, and that, you know, there's always been a strong financial community. Boston is the third city in the world for assets under management behind only London and New York. So it's actually sort of surprisingly strong, even outside the VC space. So just to throw that all into the kitty.
Don?
Yeah, it seems education is the one thing I would think might get on the list from Nashville and New York and Los Angeles when they think about New England. And it does seem to me the root of the reinvention. You've got... What's more creative than a faculty meeting, you know, who can't ever agree on anything? You know, it's like herding cats to get the faculty together and try to get them thinking about any one thing. But that's that's what New England is in large part. It's that fight about ideas and the challenge of intellect.
One of the students that we met with termed it academic Hollywood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard that. Was that cool?
I would contend it starts before college, too, because there are people that come from all over the world to come to our secondary schools.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be just college.
Would love if it was intellectual Hollywood instead of academic.
Yeah? Oh, that's... Well, he was at a university.
Yeah.
That's certainly better than Manny would.
That's the thing you don't want.
I know what you do with it, but this whole notion of punching above our weight, it's not an expression I use, but it sort of grabs something. I mean, it's been said by many that if you were to compare this region to Silicon Valley on a per capita basis, we crush them. And I don't even know the data. I'll simply take it on fact that
Scott,
I know that you and Paul Mader and...
Yeah, Paul Mader, I mean, if you look at per capita, you know, the number of patents, the venture capital
companies
created.
And if you look at the Red Sox's reputation worldwide, I mean, it's ridiculously outsized.
Yeah.
Our biotech cluster is borderline ridiculous in terms of its strength compared to other regions. So there's something there. I don't quite know what to do with it, but there is this small city. I'm a little hurt when you're comparing it to Edinburgh. Not that I have anything against Edinburgh. I'm just sort of, boy, is that it? Is that where we stack up to? But I think we've got this.
They're actually one of the most innovative over 300 or 400 years with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know nothing about Edinburgh.
They've got a visibility problem, too.
Yes. But there's something there. We're scrappy.
Yeah, think what everybody's saying. I mean, we corner the market on what I call the inputs for innovation. We have more inputs in a concentrated geography per capita. Mm-hmm.
Wait, what does that mean, inputs?
Just the input. I mean, I think of innovation as value delivered on the other end. Right? But in order to do that, you need the inputs. You need the colleges and universities. You need the ideas. You need the entrepreneurs. You need work unbelievable at the inputs. Right?
Well, the input could be like a big company that's sort of dying or shrinking or, you know, spinning off little companies.
Mm-hmm. That's fabulous, and that's why we reinvent ourselves. Mm-hmm. What we need to get better at is the outputs. How to harness, connect, create networks of all these great inputs that we have to lead the world on the output side, right? To demonstrate that this concentration that we have here in the Northeast
means something.
It has value.
What does that mean other than the whole seed corn for the West Coast?
It means the positioning that you don't have large companies? I believe the positioning that is available, and it's ours to grab if we just get our act together to take it, is to actually network, use this idea of the connectors, because that's absolutely the right way to do it, put in place a regional infrastructure that connects us across silos, get us focused on the outputs, and start demonstrating that we can solve the problems. That'll deliver value to our citizens. That will create incredible capital formation, you know, and company formation opportunities, because we're going to take the lead on the output side. That's where you can differentiate. Right, we own the input side. We have the input side won. It's time to start working on the other side of that equation. And the work you're doing in the energy space is a great example of that. Right?
I would add to that. I think, you know, we're sort of presupposing. One of the reasons you ladder up and try to find a brand is it presupposes a tactic of advertising. It presupposes that Boston or New England is going to say what they are to other people.
I don't care about
and
that.
We started the discussion. Everyone nodded their head that probably the tactic we can all agree on is that it should come from all of us, from connectors, from people who are going to do that, call it social media, call it word of mouth, call it whatever you want. And so if we all agreed that were the tactic, then we wouldn't worry about the master brand, right? When I tell you about why I love Audi, it isn't for German engineering and sort of my love of driving. It's because I can keep sushi in my glove box, and that's a nugget of something that I care about. And that's sort of the foundation of what, why, and how we share information. It's got to be relevant and timely. It's going to mean something to me. And it's small. It's not the big things we share. It's not a brand message we share. It's why it's relevant to me. It's why the Connectors program makes sense.
Well, it actually goes further than what Dave, you were saying earlier, that one of the things that you wanted to do was build a network I actually believe that there's conversations going on already. You just need to find them and listen and tap into them. You don't need to build anything. It's already probably happening.
You're 100% right. We actually think, you know, when we talk about a global network of people with ties to Boston, that's just a network of networks that already exist. It's the Harvard Alumni Club, it's the overseas campus of State Street, et cetera, et cetera. You're totally right.
I think it's also more subtle than that. It's not formal clubs, formal organization. It's a Twitter conversation or a Facebook group or an informal meetup that's happening all the time. If you had to see how many networking events happening in Boston tonight, you'd be blown away.
Yeah. One of our connectors is a guy named Mark Durschlag, who has a site called Mark's Guide, who actually shows us how many networking events are happening in Boston on any given night. And it's a good example of what I meant before when I said we're not substantive, because we go out and find people like Mark who have all the substance.
What's his name? Right.
Sorry, Doug.
One of the things that MyTex did that seemed to help was to document just the size of the MyTex companies. Now, how many are there? How many do they hire? Suppose we did that across all of those activities there and just said, look, this collection of companies and industries is going to hire 110,000 people in 2010. What a statement that is.
You see, that actually talks, one of the things that people are saying around here is that there's no big companies in Boston, but that's not where the world's going anyway. The world's not going in the direction of the big companies. Like, they're all dying. So, you know, this entrepreneurial flavor, this kind of the small is good thing is really what's going to save the world and the economy, is that everybody's empowered to do their own thing, as opposed to get a job at a big company.
Letting Cisco buy all our companies was just a clever strategy.
Gave us the funding so we can create lots of little ones.
The Trojan horse.
And letting Bank of America buy all the banks.
Well, just to kind of underscore maybe a little bit of what people have been saying, because I think it's really exciting, is that, you know, whether you like the word innovation or not, whether you, that having these kind of themes of being solutions focused, of saying, you know, we punch above our weight, of saying, you know, we're about small companies and small is beautiful, and kind of this continuous reinvention that we're the intellectual Hollywood, that we can have kind of all these agreed upon messages that we try to pollinate with everyone in our networks and get everyone thinking along, you know, singing a little bit out of some of the same hymnal. I guess I wonder if we could talk a little bit about, you know, if you were to suggest one thing that we should do after tonight to kind of start pollinating these ideas and start spreading to other people, you know, to all those constituencies that we had up there, you know, what your particular passion is, whether it's, you know, clean energy or social media or software or, you know, product design. I'll just throw out an example. I mean, one thing that we talked about, Bob had a similar meeting on this topic a month or two ago with his board of trustees, and one idea I threw out there that seemed to resonate was, what if there's a one sheet PDF that you could print out that was just sort of what Don was saying, like, here's innovation in New England, like, here's what you should know, you know, here are the three biggest companies, you know, here are, you know, the number of patents that Connecticut and Massachusetts produce, here are, you know, the number of Nobel Prize that we won, just kind of almost a talking point sheet that if you imagine being on a plane and sitting next to someone from Iowa and they say, like, so what do, you know, where are you from, having just that little PDF, or, you know, maybe it's something on your iPhone where you could say, oh yeah, you know, I'm from New England, here's what we do there, you know, not only do we have 300 X universities and we produce this many graduates, but, you know, a little bit of a talking point sheet. So I'm just tossing that out there as something that I feel like is small enough, concrete enough, free enough,
Scott,
easy enough to do.
That just sounds like, I don't know. Sounds okay. Like that brochure stuff.
I'm throwing it out there as a straw man idea of something that wouldn't require $1 million to do.
I'm going to hold my iPhone and say, hey, you know, there's 300 schools here or something.
Okay.
No, but
Richard doesn't like it.
Because we were toying with, in the clean energy space, everyone and their uncle is trying to call themselves the clean energy capital of the world, and not even sure there's much sense in the attempt. But we were trying to look at New England's biomass resources, looking at its the different clusters, the number of battery companies, which is actually pretty amazing, and using clever visuals to do it. You know, just clever sort of very modern, leading edge visualization techniques, and it's not as if everyone's going to go around with an iPhone app to present it. But there's a way of using those charts to burn it into your brain, which I think is pretty powerful. I mean, it's a stepping stone to being able to have a conversation with a guy on the plane without your iPhone.
Right, and I'm just saying, like, you know, Tom's group produced a great report that's, you know, 25 pages long about robotics in Massachusetts, and it's really a deep dive into that one industry, but and I don't want to keep talking about this, but no one's produced ever the one page, you know, here's all of this stuff, you know, all the solutions we think about, how we think about them, all of the companies that are based here, and tried to really distill it down into one.
I'm not sure it needs to be.
By the way, I'd work on that with a couple of other people if they're interested. So.
I think a handful of really innovative, interesting charts which force your brain to look at it differently.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of stuff here. Maybe what we could step back is try to think about something tangible, right? And this isn't a solution at the broad end at all. But this, you last night, Scott emailed me something. You know, will you bring this up, the June is Innovation Month idea? Is it worth mentioning that here?
Yeah, I'll just mention it as another not so straw man, but something we're actually doing. But it kind of fits into this sort of small, think free. What could you do? And we just kind of noticed it in the month of June. You know, across Rhode Island and New Hampshire and Massachusetts. You know, there are just so many conferences. Mm-hmm. That are happening at once. Like Tom, it has a conference. You know, we're doing an event in Newport around life sciences.
There are four.
MIT has a big conference. So we just said, let's call June Innovation Month and just put up a website that lists, you know, 12 of these events and encourages people, like, go to one if you care about innovation.
But now think about this.
It starts May and April.
Right, and I'm not saying we should, right, I'm just saying let's do it once, let's see if it works, and see if you could, the messaging around it is, if you care about innovation and restarting the economy, go to one of these events and just participate.
But now, so here's my idea. In that note, you had created a Twitter hashtag for New England Innovation, and it was NENO, right? It, just thinking about what can happen when you take the combination of the, there are 20 events in June, if not more. I know of many, a horde of them. The amount of people who will be attending those, and the amount of people who are leveraging social media, and giving them the power to be reporting from each of those events using, not in a hashtag about their event, but about a broad scope. And then taking that network that gets created in 30 days, and saying then something about the examples, the data, the examples, the anecdotes, the proof in the pudding of what's happening in this region. What if then on a daily basis we start pumping out, you know, the core, whatever the core group is, people start feeding in these charts that Nick is referencing.
Yeah, that's
right?
An interesting idea, right? Or you know, Carol did some article about
innovation. And obviously, and like say it that way, yeah. Right? But you
I think the daily candy of innovation is a great way to say it.
Thank you very much. but I think that's, you know, there has to be a place, but branding aside, right, you know, as I said, the place that you start to create the group and the group conversation. And I think you're onto something with having, with creating a little general brand that, on 1 month of events, right, and getting people riled up. But then once we have that intangible network, if you will, created, and people following it, how, maybe a follow-on to this is, how do we start to put things into place? So, to Don's point on a study, I worked very hard a few years back on the 9 universities economic impact study that pulled together, you know, what have the 9 schools in this region done for this region in terms of, you know, tax revenue, employment, and all that type of stuff. And taking that on, it's a very big endeavor, but to some extent, it's not one that should take, you know, if you put the right team on it, it doesn't take the 5 years it took them.
So are you proposing some kind of, just before you move on, are you proposing that some kind of study ought to be done?
I would hate...
Suppose you just collect the studies that exist.
I think it could be a time sink, but there might be a way to do it so that's not.
Kel, you had some idea about a name other than New England.
I just think we should change our vernacular and refer to it as something else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we're No, I mean, this
ideas
is a
on the
name.
Topic
it takes a little, you know, it's a long time if you get some people in a room. But even if it was just as simple as, like, you know, Tech East or whatever, or pull in New England, the Northeast versus New England, because the Northeast, I think, has better association if you were to play that game. But it just, I feel like it should be tweaked.
Matt, you've been quiet, but I saw your hand up.
Yeah, thanks. Just a couple things that we've been kicking around. One is that we feel that we need to engage with more younger students and get them involved with the various organizations. And we all belong to a lot of associations, organizations, task force, committees, whatever you want to call it. Think about this meeting right now, if there was a group of 4 or 5 college students, high school students, sitting here listening to what we're talking about and feeling that they were part of the process. Well, if you duplicated that model across all of the associations that you've got, and just invite them in, So we've made it a conscious effort at all of the High Tech Council events in New Hampshire now to always have student participation at some level. So we've got the first robotics team or the Lego League at all of our tech events where there's room and they can demonstrate what they've got. And actually for our meetings, we're just inviting them in. So it's not a formalized effort. It's just something we're out there doing. I think it's a great way to get students engaged.
And I guess the one thing we should mention that Flybridge helped launch earlier this year, and it's unfortunately Massachusetts focused, not broader New England, but they have a website called stayinma.com, and the idea is that any student who wants to go to the Mass Biotech's annual event or an Exconomy conference or whatever, and it costs $195, you can apply for a scholarship to that event and go for free. So it's a really great way of making sure that at least the students who are motivated to want to go to the Mass Medical Devices annual meeting can go for free.
And we're starting to, with that program, help identify the students with kind of stickers as they go through the event so that you as participants in the conference can identify that these are people who are here who are students and therefore go up and actively engage them and get them involved in the community.
And take their lunch money.
Yeah.
Well, in September I was assigned 4 students at HBS who were entrepreneurs or wanted to go into entrepreneurship. And I found out from them that one of the reasons why they're all 4 end up their second year, so they're all graduating, they're all going to California. And they all said 2 things. First of all, there wasn't a lot of contact with, other than me, with the outer community of entrepreneurs and things like that. And the other thing is that they didn't have one central resource that they could go to where they could find all the information about the Boston area. So I told them about my text, for example. They didn't know about it. And I told them about some of the other councils. And I think what's missing is sort of like an oasis where entrepreneurs or unaffiliated people can go to, where they can get a lot of information about what's available, not only for startups, but also for the general area.
So when you say oasis, like a physical place or an online destination?
I think that it's an online place, but I also think that it needs to have an extension out, like the spokes or like the connectors, which is grounded in like the executive core that Kennedy had or other ideas related to this, the vistas of the world. It has to be grounded sort of in a place where, very senior people can go and actually reach out to members of the community and give them personal information. I think one of the biggest differentiators between our region and California is the angel community and the senior people who have gone through it many times.
You mean lack of angel community or?
We have an angel community, but we can't connect them. And part of it is resource information, data, for lack of a better description. But part of it is a facilitation device that I can't quite describe because, I was just literally put into this situation. Assigned 4 guys. And all the way.
Doug from Harvard?
Yeah.
Who assigned you? Is it Harvard alumni?
Actually, a teacher.
I mean, the interesting thing that you kind of are starting to get to is that there are so many people that aren't involved or connected, like they're not on the board of MITEX, they're not participating in some like alumni successful entrepreneur program, and they're just kind of out there doing their thing, and like how do you create some gravitational pull to get all those people involved with this stuff? So, Carol and Janice?
So to your point, I actually have a very old-fashioned idea to sort of get some of this started, and we can do it online in a wiki, we can do it on a blog, whatever, but I think we need a directory. I think we need a collection or a company. I mean, are all the companies represented in this room in any one place besides maybe Chambers of Commerce? Call it an innovation directory, call it whatever,
Exconomy did this, I think. They did it for each kind of the segments in Boston, all the startups, how much money they raised, and little profiles on them.
And they put on like a Google Map or something.
It's actually pretty impressive.
But something really basic, I agree, and Doug, you definitely kindled this fire. The New England Clean Energy Council sort of swooped in and scooped a lot of organizations that had been enviro organizations and some that were sort of clean techy, and somehow it got away with becoming this umbrella group. And there's an opportunity for there to be an umbrella over all of us.
Right. Yes.
And it should be directed literally by all probably that left-hand column or some facsimile thereof.
Right.
So it's sort of mass innovation start here. Right. So that's kind of our goal. From there you can go anywhere.
And emerge. I mean, I look at this as like a Wikipedia of New England. I mean, really, simplifying it to come down to that. And everyone contributes to it in all the different areas that we contribute to.
Yeah, because when you start to say, like, when people start talking about a brain trust, that we just need to have one contact at every association and organization in all of the six New England states, and, you know, maybe New York, too, like, that starts to sound complex. But I like the idea of having it be online or in some kind of social
media.
There's,
quite a nice word for this platform, right? You create a platform for other people's success, or for them to connect to the other people or whatever. So it's all those things. It's a bit of a directory, it's a bit of a resource, but it's a platform that they can go to and say, gee, I can do better because of this thing.
Cool. Other thoughts, just, I want to take a break for like 5 minutes, but other thoughts on just, what if we did this, or like, this would be something cool for, you know, for one of these folks to do. So Janice, you didn't speak yet, so Janice and then Steve.
Well, we actually have been thinking about this next group of leadership. For the community, because you have leaders that we know of today, but then how do you bring up that next core? And so we talked about this at our gathering and said, well, rather than talk amongst ourselves, why don't we bring some of the young people in and ask them? And what a novel thought. So we said, okay. So we said, why don't we start with the leaders of the awards, those who've won awards, and so they're leaders in their own right, but across sectors, because half of them don't even know of each other's skill sets and capabilities across sectors, just like we talked here. So maybe in that group, so we brought a bunch of them in the room and we asked them what were some of the challenges they faced in staying here, and they listed the usual things, but then on top of that, they talked about one of the things that was going to make the difference. They said, you can make these directories and you can list all this stuff and you can talk about Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, but the real difference is going to be the personal contact. Right. And they said they don't have a way to connect with the senior leaders in this community so that they can talk to them about their general concerns and so that they can be connected. So one of the things we talked about doing, which was to create salons. Now that sounds like an old-fashioned term, but in fact, it's a way of bringing people across sectors and bringing in some key leaders. And because, you know, they're all really busy, and you talk about mentoring, you talk about hooking up, and people run away from it. They like it, but they're afraid because it can consume a lot of time. So we thought there might be a way to create these salons that can start small, because we think big, but you got to start somewhere, and introduce them. Just start with the introduction and allow discussions to occur.
You know, so two things I would mention. One that exists already but is a good model maybe, which is that, you know, Bob Metcalf, I don't know if you've ever been to his, he has a townhouse on Peter Street, and, you know, a couple times a year we'll have a salon for around energy, or a salon for all the students participating in the MIT entrepreneurship competition. Mm-hmm. And it's a really neat model of, you know, all he does is kind of provide the venue, and I think pays the, you know, the catering bill and the bar bill. And the other thing I was going to mention that kind of has been circulating around is this idea of, I've talked to a couple of the student entrepreneurship clubs, and they say, you know, it's interesting that you can go out to Silicon Valley on spring break and visit all the companies in Silicon Valley, but there isn't anything like that in Boston or
we organized a week called Innovation Week, which was the week before the DNC, the summer of 2004. I say we, it was the collaborative, but with 30 or 40 organizations, and had museums open, and we actually thought to try to have labs open and other things so that people could, there's so little of Fidelity people going over to see, you know, an MIT or surgical lab at Mass General or that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I like, you know, the idea that kind of has started to emerge is like, if you had one Friday a month during the school year and maybe during the summer too, where companies could sort of somehow sign up and say, you know, we have this boardroom, we can have a group of 20 students, we'll feed them pizza and tell them about Zipcar. You know, I've talked about it with Scott Griffith, and just have sort of an ongoing, you know, they call them tech treks when they do it in Silicon Valley, but if you had it throughout the whole academic year of, you know, all right, Genzyme can take 40 students on this Friday, you know, as a way to kind of get the students connecting with all these.
But, you know, it's not just the students. You're about students, but it's really those who may have elected because they were students here to stay here, but they want to find more of a reason to continue to stay here.
Okay.
So it's those who are in that sort of mid-career building phase
Yeah.
that are trying to find that hook, because they've sort of made a choice to stay, and now they want to be part of the community, and they don't know how to be part of the community.
When you're out of the university cocoon.
Yeah, you get out of the university.
There's right? that in-between area that you can feel lost and leave.
Scott, who organizes that Silicon Valley trip for Sloan and Harvard MBA?
You know, I think it's different clubs. It's like
it's the entrepreneur group.
Harvard and
Sloan. I thought it was someone on the West Coast who basically cracked that nut.
I think it's different student-run clubs at those schools. And MIT actually has a media entertainment club, I think, that usually organizes one for MIT Sloan students in Massachusetts, but most of the other business schools don't do anything locally. They just go out to the Valley.
That just seems such easy, low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, Devin and the seat.
Well, so the 1-in-3 Boston program has an advisory council of the mayor, and one of the committees on it is Jobs and Careers, and they're actually working on a sector track. They're calling it sector tracks, but we'd love your help. So they're working on it. We're presenting to the mayor in July, probably early July, but you know, that group is looking for companies to connect with, and I guess trade organizations that they could work with to get more companies on board so that they can go around and do exactly that.
Cool.
So
on that note, just to jump in for one second, one of the other things that differentiates Boston is this incredible concentration of young people. So you know, because I was at the BRA when the study was done, Boston is the second highest concentration of adults aged 20 to 34. Behind Austin, like slimly behind Austin. So that's another really key thing to go with, I think, with reinvention, and maybe it really dovetails perfectly with reinvention, is this incredible one. You know, I don't know if the world thinks of Boston as a youthful city, but it's an incredibly youthful city. Sorry.
Steve. I had an idea for something I think is low-hanging fruit and that hits people from a very different angle than what we talked about right now, which is that my wife and I went to a city on the northeast coast of Massachusetts, I think it was Newburyport, one summer weekend, and there was a festival in the town, which is not surprising, and it was homecoming festival. And I thought, homecoming, that's like the second week of September. What's this doing in the summer? Where's the football game? And it turned out that homecoming, there was a, you know, all the restaurants were out on the street with booths, but there were also hiring companies that were out on the street with booths. And civic associations out there. So I spoke with someone from probably the mayor's office who said, he said all of our high school grads leave Newburyport, but they have family in Newburyport. And then later in life, they get married and settle down, and they're looking for some place to go. And so this is the event where we ask them to come back to Newburyport and move here. There's a lot, it's a wonderful town. There's a lot of great things that they appreciate probably now, et cetera. And so what's special about this is that you could pick an existing holiday when people go home from New York, from Chicago, from San Francisco. That could be the 4th of July, could be Christmas break. Pick one of those holidays, call it New England Homecoming Weekend. All the regional, you know, economic development people who are here get together and make it the same day, okay? And then the message is come back and visit and find out why you'd want to stay here. Come back from Chicago, come back from Houston. In fact, you're back here to visit your extended family who lives here. Why not consider moving here? Why not have each town's major employer put on reasons for those people who are coming back in town to stay in town? A neat thing about this is that there's a lot of what I'll call sectarianism in New England, which is that if New Hampshire has a budget, they're not gonna spend it to get people to move back to Boston. And if Worcester has a budget, they're not going to spend it to get people to move back to Sturbridge, you know, or whatever. And so this lets us act in concert. This lets us take advantage of all those people who have left. And you know what? California is not as great as it used to be, and Houston's not as great as it used to be. And New England keeps reinventing itself and has a lot of appeal. And so this lets us go to our agents, you know, around the world and say to them, and actually have a day when they're back here anyway, and we say, check us out, take a look, come and stay. You know, now that you're older and more experienced settled down, et cetera, consider moving back here where your grandparents are, et cetera.
Okay, so what I'd love to do is you all promised that you would stay until 8:30. So don't leave, but Matt, can you tell us where the restrooms are, and we can get sort of more pizza, restroom break, soda, and then come back in 5 minutes and both continue this and kind of wrap up with follow-up? I just want to wrap up. We can continue talking a little bit about if you have some concrete things to propose or ideas to propose. I wanted to just talk about sort of like the very end, like how are we going to do this? What are we going to try to do? Is there any follow-up? You know, the two things that I know are going to happen as a result of this meeting are we're designating June as New England Innovation Month, which is an old school, you know, let's try to pick a month and say this is about innovation. But we're going to do it next month, put up a website just to list 11 or 12 of the big innovation-related events that happen all around the region.
You're doing it even if we all disagree.
Right.
With you.
I don't care.
I hope we're doing it.
I hope you have ideas.
He's going to say we helped him do it.
No, we're going to try using, as Kristen was saying, we're going to try using that tag, NENO, just to sort of, if someone's blogging or tweeting about one of the events, so that they'll all have that tag attached to it, hopefully. And it's stuff like the Boston Biotech CEO Forum that Christoph puts together, and Convergence that we're doing in Newport, and the Spring Unconference that Tom's group does, and Mass Network Communications, and the MITEX Awards happen in June. And so all those things we're going to try to kind of get people, you know, congealing around. And the other thing that I know is going to happen is I'm just going to post my notes on my blog from tonight's conversation and post links to whatever anyone else does as a result, just so that it can be open and other people can, you know, if you want to come to my blog and post a comment because you don't have a blog of your own, please do that.
Scott, can I ask that you connect us all? Because
I was going to ask just this follow-up, you know, what would you suggest as the way to connect? Because you all have everyone's email now, but does there need to be a Facebook group? Does there need to be a Ning group? Does there need to be some other
Facebook group?
You could do a Facebook group and keep it open so other people could see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Twitter names would be nice. Just
It
seems like a lot of people are on Twitter.
Yeah, it's hard to find everybody.
Send around
join
the
it.
How can we do that?
I would just add that in our 700 person community that just came together, I tried to force people toward LinkedIn and Facebook groups, and what happened is they all rebelled and went to Twitter. I think, you know, without my encouragement, and that just really took off.
This group, who's on Twitter already?
It's
just
Jess.
No, it's
me too.
Jess
and Nick.
Pass
around a piece of paper.
Thank
you.
Hey, Kel, would you just rip off a piece of paper and have everyone write their Twitter name on a piece so that I can just do this? We're going to go analog here.
I want to just throw out one other idea. I may be a little bit unique here in that I kind of have this army of connectors that are signed on to help. And so you know, as we're thinking about ideas that are on that, you know, cheap or free end of the spectrum, those are going to be driven by, you know, manpower or person power, or, you know, whatever, headcount. For instance, you mentioned the daily candy of innovation. I think that's a really interesting phrase and easy to kind of get my mind around. You know, So a subset of these connectors are coming together into a team around user-generated content, right? Basically, we've talked a lot about content tonight. I would guarantee that I could say to that group of connectors, hey, you guys make yourself available. I'll buy a bunch of flip cameras, and we'll let all the VCs in the area know that any company that they own will go interview the founder so that person can get some FaceTime, you know, via our site, and we can share that in different things. So I'm just... this is an imprecise idea, but just throwing it out there to kind of illustrate the idea of like helping to corral some of this content to keep and even build a little bit of momentum from this conversation. And then the other thing, Scott, you know, you're being very gracious by starting this conversation out saying, you know, I don't want to impose on your time after this and I don't want to have structure and so on. But for myself, you know, I think this conversation is going to have to take on a little bit of structure. So follow-ups and all that are great as far as I'm concerned.
Indeed, what I was saying is I didn't want to impose anything, any other tasks, but if you have, you know, if there's a project, I love the idea of saying, like, we're going to buy, you know, 20 flip cams and encourage people to go interview, like, the most inspirational entrepreneur that they know or the person who's solving the biggest problem in the world. You know, like, please, you know, feel free to ask this group, see if you can know, corral people.
Get more engagement,
sure. So to be involved with your project.
I had an idea that was sort of like that, and we've talked a bit about it in my text, which is to sponsor a competition for young people who have joined a company within a year, let's say, out of school, on my first job. And they get 2.5 minutes of video time to do this, and it's handheld and whatever else they do, and they get to propose it, and some group of and it goes up on some site, and other people determine who the winners are, and the top five get, I don't know, $1,000 or a beer bash or something of that sort, but you get the enthusiasm of the, I keep calling them kids. Everybody's a kid relative to me. The young people just out of school for the businesses that they've joined, and you get an advertisement for that firm that's carried through in a very genuine way by somebody who's got some natural enthusiasm for it. So that sort of fits with your.
Related to that, all those young kids coming out of college can't find jobs right now.
Exactly.
They're looking for something to do that gives them exposure to, you know, decision makers and companies and I think that has a lot of.
I actually think there are a lot of. I heard an interesting idea recently, but I feel like there's a lot to be done around, like, either students who this summer are going to be underemployed or people who've been laid off and are underemployed right now. And, like, how. I wonder who in this group has the idea, like, to harness those people. I was talking with Russ Wilcox, the CEO of E-Inc, recently, and he had this idea of, like, what if you just had one night in a ballroom at the Royal Sonesta and you said, if you're unemployed and you're in technology, show up. And, you know, some people bring ideas about businesses they wanted to build or, you know, a website they wanted to build, and just have people kind of self-organize into teams and, you know, see if some of those teams turn into companies. And I just thought that was really cool. So, yeah.
For our Transforming Healthcare Summit where you spoke, we had 35 volunteers, and of those, about 29 of those were people who've been laid off in healthcare who volunteered, and our deal with them was kind of, if you show up at the event as a volunteer from 4 p.m. through 9:30 p.m., we'll give you a free ticket, and we'll also profile you on our site, so if you get us your information, we'll list you as a volunteer, and you can wear your name with a whatever that's called, a ribbon that says volunteer, organizer on it, et cetera, at the event. And that was very helpful and powerful, because the people who are laid off, they're actively looking for a job. They're also very idealistic and excited about healthcare and excited about healthcare reform, which was the theme of the event. So that for people who want to do events or industry-oriented functions of some sort, tapping into that pool, simply by putting on a website of some sort, you know, volunteers wanted, that was how we got our volunteers. They just read the group for volunteers on our own site, you clicked on the link, got an email that went to me, and then we gave them a very simple deal to get on board.
Other thoughts on, like, follow-up or next steps?
I just want to say one of the coolest things I heard was the notion of some type of, it was called a wiki. It was
Wikipedia, like a New England Wikipedia.
Some type of, dare I use the word, gateway, that actually, I mean, the list we had on the left-hand side of the board of all the subsectors, I mean, there are things in that list which I don't think I've ever really thought much about. I would learn a lot from exploring just a self-populated, using another old-fashioned word, portal, which allowed me to go in and look down any spoke and see what's down there. And I think it would be very valuable as a way to present the region. And each spoke could sort of populate its own.
And I think there's a portal above that. The portal above that is...
At the top of the gateway, there's a portal.
There's something above that that is, to the extent that Kel said, it's a appropriately defined one-page site or whatever it is that says, this is what the mission is, and this is what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And that page connects to all these UGC type of tools, one being the portal you just referenced, which is a form of what Carol said, is, you know, essentially a directory of what's happening or of resources or organizations throughout these sectors. But then it's that same, back to the portal page, would tie into, here's the Facebook group of the you know, the people in this room that started it. Mm-hmm. Join it if you care about innovation in New England. Here's the Twitter feed of everybody that's tweeting on innovation in New England using that hashtag. Sign up here to get your daily candy thought of what's happening on innovation in New England. And you're saying, like, we create the central place where then a lot of UGC content could flow from, and what do you call it? Where the community, the hub.
The best example I've seen of that is TechCrunch has its Crunchbase. Crunchbase is their database that lists everyone who works in Web 2.0 consumer-oriented companies, supposedly nationally, really with a focus on the Bay Area, California, and every company as well. And then under that, there's self-populated data points like companies' rounds of funding, number of employees, big events like layoffs, etc. And then below that, there's also TechCrunch articles that mention the company's name in it. Wonderful resource, 10 times better than just Googling the company's name or looking at the company's website.
We're working with Doug Banks at Massive Tech to open up their currently not-so-free directory, which has like thousands and thousands. We've convinced them to make it free. And that could be the starting point, because it's there already. Everybody knows MassiTech. So Doug's a big supporter of this stuff.
Cool. So we have like 3 minutes left to sort of wrap up, or other thoughts on follow-ups.
I mean, I was just thinking that there's sort of a general mission here that's to recruit and retain both talent and companies in the region. And, you know, to the point of, it's also sort of an extension of the connectors, but if all we were doing is asking people to either be a fan or to recommend New England, which is to say, I'm making it work here in my industry, and I'm raising my hand, whether you're talent or whether you're a company, and you're in that critical decision-making stage of, I'm staying or I'm going, or I'm coming and building here, or I'm leaving. But if you want to talk to someone in your industry, all you have to do is scan, and there's a lot of tactical ways you could do that through the tools we talked about. But at its core, any program should start there, because we are the best salespeople for this region, those who are making it work here, and in our specific industry and our specific connection. And so whether you call that a mentor or a fan or whatever, and the tactics fall in place, but we should all sign on for that. I'm willing to sign on for that, because I will sell anybody on staying in Boston if they ask me. And you know, whether it starts in this group and goes outward from there, it seems daunting, but it's actually pretty simple. Ask for the sale, ask for the recommendation.
Okay, so one minute each for these last 3 points here.
Sure. There is a Boston-based startup company called Povo.com, which is a wiki, and we have Povo sourced into part of our site. It's sourced into the more sort of social, cultural, textural part of our site, where people can talk about, you know, museums and restaurants, whatever. But so I just throw Povo out there as a possible solution, whether it's the piece that's coming through our site or through their site. It's Creative Commons, you know, maybe a good way to go.
POV
as in Victor O. It's the Portuguese word, like the equivalent of volks, like common folk. Kind of thing.
All right, two quick ideas, and this is like an even round rule. Whatever we do as a group or as subgroups, just say there's going to be a social media component. Mm-hmm. So you write an article, Scott, it gets tweeted. You know, we do a directory, it gets put out there. I mean, that's just an undercurrent that we could just say that's going to be something we apply moving forward. The second thing is, this is not to see the glasses half empty, but in any subsequent discussion we have, I think we need to elevate what are the obstacles that prevent people from staying here or leaving here, because we're going to want to deal with them and understand how to answer them. So it's for another time, but it's...
Yeah, I'm totally open to that. I worry that you sometimes wind up in a little bit of a black hole. Like, I think some of the state groups start talking about, like, well, the traffic is bad, and so let's think about solutions for, you know, dealing with the traffic or the price of housing or whatever, but that's just my...
Well, just to preempt the question, you know, there's messaging around it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Doug?
Well, I had two ideas. One was the executive core idea, where we somehow get people to submit their LinkedIn profile or some kind of resume or backgrounder, so that we can get people to kind of stay with mentorship. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is sort of a Creative Commons idea. One of the complaints about the Globe is that it's really shitty at highlighting local companies.
What?
Are we coming back to this?
No. I don't want to kick a dead horse, but more seriously, I think there should be a way for local small startups to highlight what they're doing, and in a Creative Commons kind of way. So Creative Commons is this content license that allows people to. It's an alternative form of copyright. So just create this place where people can highlight companies.
All right. Could it be a wiki where people can post a page about their companies? Is that sort of along the lines you're thinking?
Yeah.
That's not bad. That's easy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Anyone have one last 1 minute thought, suggestion?
So on my blog, this whole wiki idea came up. It was almost as if you wrote it. And so I bought the URL, wikismart.com.
You're willing to sell it to this group.
That's where the marketing comes in. And if he wants to buy it for $500,000, I'm happy to give it to you.
Now, resell, does that play in New Hampshire?
Wiki Smart.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
Wiki Smart. Yeah, that
works. Smart. SMART.
No
R.
That works.
Wiki Smart.
Maybe that's a new
one. No, someone was talking about wicked smart people in Boston in a directory, so it sort of popped in my head and I bought it. But I will tell you that Deval Patrick's guy kind of has his eye on it, so we can move fast if we want it.
Okay, so like I said, I'm gonna try to post links to everything that was tweeted and blogged about what we did. I just want to thank you all for coming. I really appreciate
thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.